Welcome today to our interview series with outstanding professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with Dr. William Gray, President of Corporate Mentoring Solutions, Incorporated. William is a noted international expert in the field of mentoring. Bill, thank you for coming in to do this interview and sharing your insights with the audience.
Stephen, thanks for inviting me to do this.
Bill, what is your background in the field of mentoring?
Like a lot of people, I have had mentors at key points in my life, and I have mentored other people as well. One of the most important mentors I had was my thesis professor when I was working on my PhD, because he was from British Columbia, Canada, and it was because of him that I immigrated to Canada. He was from Canada and suggested I send my resume up to the University of British Columbia way back in 1970. I did. They brought me up for an interview. They liked me. I liked them. And I taught at the University of British Columbia for 15 years because of my mentor. So I got started in the field of mentoring actually in 1978. And have been very active in mentoring ever since. So this is my 28th year. The first 8 years of my involvement in mentoring, I was at the University of British Columbia, and our focus was almost entirely on mentoring within education. We focused on mentoring students of various kinds. We focused on mentoring new teachers, new school principals, and so on. In 1986, my wife and I both decided to leave academia and to focus full-time on developing mentoring programs and training participants to be successful within mentoring relationships. And so we left the university, and we became business owners. And one of the things we both did was we sought out friends who owned their own business to be our business mentors to help us make the transition from being on salary at a university to generating our own income as entrepreneurs.
Why would organizations and businesses care about mentoring programs? And how does mentoring enable business success, competitive advantage, differentiation, and business value?
Every so often, Stephen, there are surveys in which they find the best companies to work for. What is consistently found in these surveys is that best companies have mentoring programs. And they do this for a lot of good reasons. One is that a mentoring program attracts the most talented new hires to join your company. It also can reduce turnover quite significantly so that the mentoring program itself will more than pay for itself by reduced turnover. One study, for example, was done by the Emerging Workforce, and they found that regularly provided mentoring will reduce turnover by 19% compared with no mentoring being provided on a regular basis. And that's quite a savings if you multiply it out. Some other reasons for mentoring programs is that they can satisfy very specific business goals. For example, it's no secret that in almost all organizations today, the baby boom generation is getting ready to retire in massive numbers. So there is a great need for these boomers to transfer their institutional knowledge and their professional knowledge to the next generation before they leave that organization. And mentoring is one of the ways that is being used to do this. Another business reason for mentoring is succession planning. Making sure that you've got people in the pipeline to put into key positions as these boomers begin to retire in massive numbers. Another key business goal is silo busting. In the so-called good old days, people advanced their careers through a particular part of the organization. Maybe they were in operations or finance or sales or marketing or whatever. And as they advanced their career, they really became very much socialized by the silo they were in. So as they reached the top trying to lead the entire organization, they had a very narrow perspective of what that organization actually needed to do to be successful. So many companies are setting up mentoring programs to do silo busting. And the way that works is they match partners who are in different parts of the organization so that they can begin to understand and appreciate what each part of that organization contributes to the overall functioning of the organization. Mentoring programs can also be started to support other initiatives. We've always viewed mentoring as a tool for doing this. For example, about 90% of all the mentoring programs that we've been asked to develop in the corporate and government sector has been to support already established diversity initiatives. Because if you can match up people who are different and they can learn to work with each other successfully in a mentoring relationship, what they learn about human differences and how to work with those differences can be transferred to working with other people throughout that organization. Other types of initiatives that mentoring can support is the development of the talent management pool. Many organizations are spending major dollars to identify the best and brightest and begin to develop their talent, and mentoring is one of the tools being used to do this. Another initiative mentoring can support is training and development. For example, we helped Scotiabank reduce the time to learn 103 competencies from 12 months on average to 9 months on average by attaching mentoring to the existing training program that was already in place. So there are many, many sound business reasons for establishing different kinds of mentoring initiatives to support already established initiatives within that organization.
Why are mentoring programs started?
Well, I've already mentioned some of the reasons. I guess probably the question to really ask is, who are they being started for? Who are the beneficiaries? And by far, all across North America, the biggest group that is benefiting from mentoring. Are students in our school systems. These students could be at risk of dropping out. Mentoring is being used to keep them motivated to stay in school and be successful. Other students include English second language students and students needing enrichment that they cannot get in the regular curriculum. Across the USA in particular, there's been a really big push to make sure that freshmen complete their first year and come back for their second year. Across the USA, the national dropout rate for freshmen is about 25%. And for minority freshmen, it's about 65%. So almost every campus in the USA has a mentoring program focusing on the retention of freshmen. As I mentioned earlier, mentoring programs are used to attract new hires, and they come into mentoring programs for new hires. That's why they hire on. They know they won't fall through the cracks. They're going to get up to speed quicker. They're going to feel they're part of the organization and welcomed into it by their mentors. Another group that is benefiting from mentoring is that large middle group that is trying to develop their career in one fashion or another. We've set up many programs to help people explore different career path options, so that they can choose the path that's best for them and for the organization. It's no secret that if you pick the wrong path, it can really jeopardize your career. And this is especially true in high-tech companies, where you might pick a managerial path as a technical person, when in fact you should be going down the technical path to a higher level. Many organizations are also realizing that they cannot wait until leaders reach the top of the pyramid to start developing future leaders to go even higher. And so what many organizations are doing is what I call multi-level leadership development. For example, the Air National Guard is recognizing that they need to develop leadership capability when you come in as a new recruit into the Guard, and that you develop personal leadership competencies, like the ability to assess yourself, your honesty, your integrity, your character, things like that. And then a little later, when you've developed those competencies, you then start working on another set where you're going to lead teams and groups of people. And once you've developed those competencies and have performed well in that new role, then you can develop another set of strategic level leadership competencies for leading the institution. And many organizations are starting to take this view, that we must start developing leaders at all levels, because we don't know really who's going to emerge as the leaders to ultimately lead our companies or organizations. And I mentioned before, but I think it's worth mentioning again, the reason that formalized mentoring programs were started back in the late 1970s was because the research clearly indicated that many people of color and females were not included in informal mentoring, the kind that just happens naturally and spontaneously. And so to make sure they were included in mentoring and got mentoring, formalized mentoring programs were set up to include the entire diversified workforce, so people were not excluded.
So here's a sort of related question with regards to mentoring. And you know, there's a problem with women in IT, and I can see that that can be addressed through really more formal mentoring kind of programs, perhaps, for women in IT. There's also a situation where we have declining numbers in terms of enrollment at universities in the IT field, and that's going to create a serious skills shortage, let's say by 2010. Can you sort of maybe give some sort of program details of how maybe this can be addressed?
Yes. In fact, we have actually worked along the very lines that you've been describing, Stephen. We got started in the field of mentoring by focusing entirely on providing mentoring for students in grades 5 through 12. And what these students did was hook up with a mentor who, in many, many cases, acquainted them with possible career opportunities and realities. And what the students gained was a better understanding of what they might want to do with their life. Let me just give you a real quick example. I can remember very clearly two female students in grade 6 started out on a mentoring project where they thought they wanted to become fashion models, and so they were doing a project on the fashion industry. Well, as they got into the project, they began to realize that advertisers use women's sexuality to sell products. And they became quite upset with this and decided to do a critique of the advertising industry. They decided they didn't want to go into fashion modeling. And that's the kind of thing that that can be done, to find people who are already in the IT field. And they can start mentoring students at any level to begin to acquaint them with what are the opportunities, what are the realities, what do I need to study and become good at in order to be successful. Because no one wants to end up being the proverbial a square peg in a round hole. That, you know, that's very uncomfortable and dissatisfying. So you need to make sure that you have the capability and can go into a technology field, and it matches who you are and what you want to become. And that's really what mentoring can be done for students when they're still in the school system. Now, when they're in university, many students have trouble, especially as a freshman, as I mentioned. They're away from home for the first time, and many of them don't come back for year two for all kinds of reasons. So mentoring freshmen to make sure that they complete their studies successfully with an emphasis on studies that would get them into some sort of technology field. And the mentoring could also begin to help them understand what are the majors they could choose to get into different aspects of technology, because they might not even know what the possibilities are out there. You know, they might think that technology is just being a software programmer. They might not know anything about being a systems administrator or a security mentoring can be multifaceted, but I think it's really important for young people at whatever age to begin to get a realistic idea of what's out there, what are the possibilities, and what do they need to do as a student to prepare themselves to go into a field that matches who they are, what their capabilities are, and what they would like to become in life as a career.
With your extensive experiences in this area, what do you feel are the key components of a successful mentoring program?
I've had the very good fortune over 28 years of developing well over 150 different mentoring programs, and each one has been different. And there are a number of components that I have discovered are absolutely essential. I think the single most important thing is planning the right program to implement. If you don't plan the right program to implement, you cannot produce the results that you want to produce. In other words, one size fits all when it comes to mentoring just does not work. Many organizations make the mistake of benchmarking what other organizations are doing and then transplanting that to their own organization. Usually those programs fail as well because the participants in each mentoring program are different. They have different sets of needs and goals, and so the program has to be designed to help them achieve what they want to achieve. Another important component is knowing what the program requires of you. What are its expectations? What are the guidelines? And this is done through publicity, making sure that you're informed so that you make an informed decision about whether or not to enroll in the program. One of the worst things that can happen is you get into a mentoring relationship with somebody and then you realize this program isn't what I thought it was, and then you want to get out of it. That doesn't help anybody. So it's better to have publicity to make an informed decision early on. I would say the key person in the success of a mentoring program is the coordinator. This person has to be committed and has to be trained to know what to do. I kind of liken it to a helicopter. The coordinator has to be able to go up and see the big picture and then be able to come down at ground level and deal with issues as they arise. Small problems are going to pop up all the time, and if you can deal with them quickly and effectively, they don't mushroom into big problems. I've never seen a mentoring program of any kind that was successful that did not have a committed, trained coordinator. Mentoring programs do not run themselves. A coordinator has to oversee and run the program in order to make sure relationships are working and that the intended results are going to occur. Another essential component is matching best fit mentoring partners. You can't just randomly put people together. That doesn't make any sense at all in a mentoring relationship. You want the mentor-protege or mentor-mentee partners to be best fit partners. And by that I mean, if the protege has a set of needs that they need help with, the mentor has to have a corresponding set of expertise. The partners have to have a certain level of compatibility. And especially in a long-term relationship, let's say they're together for 9 months or 12 months, and over the duration of this longer relationship, they're going to be doing many things together. If they clash, they're not likely to want to meet, and if they do meet, they're not likely to accomplish very much. It's kind of like a bad marriage in a way. So there's got to be a certain level of interpersonal compatibility. Another essential component is partner training. There was a research study done in 1996 where they looked at mentoring in 8 nations around the world, and they found that the number one problem And the number one reason for mentoring failing was partners did not know what to do because they were not trained. And so what we started doing over 20 years ago is training partners together at the same time. And after we've trained mentoring partners together, mentors have consistently told us that this partner training jumpstarts the mentoring relationship by 2 to 6 months compared to when the mentors were previously trained alone or received no training at all. Now, why does this work? Because partners do proven activities together during the training to develop a comfort level that lets them discuss real issues and actually engage in mentoring, so that during the training session itself, mentoring actually starts. It doesn't happen later. It actually starts in the training session. Another essential component of a successful mentoring program is monitoring what's going on. And again, the coordinator is the person who does this. There's an old saying, what's inspected gets done, what's expected may get done. So if the intent of the program is that the mentors and proteges must say work on us on developing specific competencies, the only way that is guaranteed to happen is if the coordinator monitors their activity and makes sure they are, in fact, working on the competencies and developing the competencies. On the other hand, if a program is only intended to just allow people to get together and maybe talk around topics of mutual interest, you don't have to really monitor that in the same way, because the business reason for setting up that kind of mentoring experience is not the same, because you're not expecting the same outcomes. And then finally, if you're thinking of continuing the program or expanding it to include more people, it's really important to evaluate what happened, because this allows you to refine all of the components of the program, what worked, what didn't, what needs tweaking, so that you refine these different components and make sure that the next cycle is even better than the beginning cycle. If you're not going to continue the program or expand it, it's still important to evaluate the results to find out, did the program achieve the business goals for which it was intended?
I guess this then brings up the question, why do some mentoring programs fail?
Well, something that has puzzled me over my 28 years in the field of mentoring is this. It has just absolutely amazed me that so many mentoring program initiators who want to start programs do not seek out mentoring to help them conceptualize, plan, and implement the right program for their participants. But instead, they waste one or more years figuring out what to do. And I find this really ironic because, on the one hand, they don't mind making mistakes themselves, but they don't want others to make needless mistakes, and so that's why they're starting a mentoring program for these other people. So the bottom line is that the initiators of mentoring programs need to be mentored by people who know more than they do, and unfortunately this does not happen all the time. Another source of failure is that the wrong mentoring program is conceptualized and implemented. And the wrong program can be conceptualized in many different ways. There's many different kinds of mentoring. There's reciprocal mentoring, where I mentor you and you mentor me. There's peer mentoring, where we're at the same level and we help each other. Peer mentoring is not appropriate if you want people to understand career path options, because they're not far enough ahead of you in their career to help you in your career. So it's really important that the wrong program that the right program is conceptualized and implemented. Another source of failure is unclear program goals. A program cannot be all things at all times to all people. A program has to have a fairly clear set of program goals or it cannot possibly accomplish those goals. For example, if the program is mainly being set up to reduce turnover, then that's what it should focus on, and the mentor should be chosen who can help reduce turnover among a group that's leaving the company. As an example, we set up a program at AT&T Consumer Products Lab where they had turnover among high potentials because they were not being promoted. The lab had delayered, and there were no places to promote these high potentials. In order to keep them at AT&T Consumer Products Lab, we found mentors who were willing to take on 2, 3, 4, 5 proteges to work on that mentor's project. And once these proteges began to realize that this mentor has leading-edge expertise that I cannot learn anywhere else except by working on this project with this mentor, they stayed. And not only did they stay, but as an added bonus, each project now had a team of people that could get the product out the door quicker and gain competitive advantage that it never could have before the mentoring program was set up. So every program has to be clear on what is its goal, because that has a bearing on who is involved as the mentor and the proteges. Likewise, the participants have to be clear on their goals. Most mentors very willingly volunteer their time and their expertise, but they want the protege to be pretty clear on what they want to work on so they can quickly get started on it. A major problem in every kind of mentoring program today is lack of time. In fact, it's a major problem in people's lives. We just don't have enough time. So busy mentors really want protégés to have clear goals. Unclear goals can really doom a program. Another reason for failure is that mutual benefits don't result. And by this, I mean mutual benefits for the protege, the mentor, and the organization. If the mentor doesn't get something beneficial out of donating time and expertise, they're not likely to volunteer again. If the organization doesn't benefit, they're not likely to put up the money to sponsor the program. And of course, if the proteges don't benefit, then they don't engage in mentoring either. So it's important when you're planning the program to identify what are the mutual benefits that this program absolutely has to have and build those in. If you don't get mutual benefits, you're really heading for failure. I mentioned earlier that another source of program failure was organizations are benchmarking what other organizations are doing and then transplanting this into their organization. And in my experience, these instant transplants don't work. There's got to be some customization because the participants are different, the goals they're working on, the needs they have are different, the kind of mentors and mentoring that's required will be different, the duration of the relationship is going to be different. Is it a shorter or a longer term? How mentoring is implemented is different. The roles and functions of the mentor will be different. For example, when we work with Pillsbury during program planning, the bosses of the proteges said, if you want us to support the mentoring program, mentors cannot do any coaching because we're being trained to coach these direct reports who are going to be the proteges. So it's really important to not benchmark and very simplistically transplant. Another source of failure in mentoring programs is utilizing instant experts in the field of mentoring. If you do a search on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com, you'll find over 300 books on mentoring. Many of these are written by instant experts who have developed a few programs, typically the same way each time, think they know how to do it, and have written a book. And they can really hurt a program with their very narrow perspective. Another source of program failure is inadequate coordination. I mentioned previously the key person in successful mentoring programs is the coordinator. They have to fulfill their functions. Another source of program failure that I also mentioned previously was partners not being trained together. Now, some organizations make the mistake of training only the mentors or only the proteges or mentees, and then putting them together, matching them up, but they still don't know what to do. Let me give you an example from my experience. Shell Oil in Malaysia hired us to come down there and salvage a mentoring program that had been going on for about a year. They had hired an instant expert to come in and train mentors for a week and proteges for a week, and then they matched these individuals up as partners and expected them to know how to work together as partners. What they found over a period of a year is the partners didn't know what to do when they got together. So we went in and did some training of the partners over 2 days, and that program lasted for 9 years. We also attached a trainer to it, so trainers could continue to do what we role modeled when we were down there.
How can an organization create a mentoring culture?
Well, here again, if you talk to an instant expert, you'll get a different answer than if you talk with someone who's been around in the field of mentoring for a long time. It takes a lot of hard work to develop a mentoring program. The U.S. Dictionary of Occupational Titles designates mentoring as the most complex human activity. It's more complex than teaching or coaching or counseling or role modeling or anything you can think of. It's the most complex type of human interaction. So if you're trying to set up a mentoring program for individuals, each of whom are unique, have unique needs and goals, and are going to work with an individual mentor, then you can just imagine how difficult it is to set up a program that's going to be successful. So what I did is I thought about this for a long time, and I have conceptualized a 5-stage mentoring program maturity model. And depending on what kind of mentoring you want to provide for the people in your organization, then you can set up a program at any one of these 5 stages, but at least you know what's required at each stage. At stage 1, it's basically informal mentoring. You encourage people to get together around the water cooler, in the elevator, at the coffee table, and discuss topics of interest. That is not really a program. That's just encouraging informal mentoring. At stage 2, is a very basic kind of program where there is some planning, there's some business goals that the program's being set up to achieve, like maybe reducing turnover, increasing retention. But there's not a lot of coordination and monitoring to make sure anything really happens. There's probably not any training, certainly not for partners, maybe for mentors, maybe for mentees. But it's very, very basic. At stage 3, there is more planning because there is a very clear business case for developing a set of competencies. These are usually core competencies around, say, leadership development or technology or some fairly focused area where these competencies must be developed in a fairly short period of time for a business reason. And so at stage 3, you set up a competency-based mentoring program. People are matched up around the competencies. I have a need, you have an expertise. The coordinator is going to monitor to make sure we're actually developing the competencies because of the business case that this be done. What is characteristic of these competency-based programs is usually they involve a small number of targeted individuals, maybe 20 to 50 proteges. And And so it's really targeted and on a pretty small scale. At stage four is what I call institutionalized mentoring programs. These programs tend to be competency-based, but much larger. They involve many, many people in the organization. And that's why it's institutionalized. Again, there's a lot of program planning at the front end to make sure the right program is conceptualized and then implemented. There's a strong business case. The coordinators are trained. They know what to do. They're going to do it to make sure the program is successful. At the fifth stage is where you get your mentoring culture. And that's where mentoring has been so widespread throughout the organization that it's just become part of the culture. It becomes okay to request mentoring assistance from anybody at any time, anywhere. It's okay to provide it to anybody at any time, anywhere. In other words, the entire diversified workforce is involved in mentoring. It's not restricted to a targeted group where other groups are not included. It's open and really encouraged for everybody. Now, going through these five stages doesn't happen overnight. In fact, if you don't go through the stages, you will not end up at stage five with a mentoring culture. That is the outgrowth of institutionalized mentoring occurring in many, many places throughout the organization, not just for a small targeted group. What I also have realized is that in order to go from a competency-based stage three mentoring program to an institutionalized mentoring program to a mentoring culture, it really requires a web-based system be used so that you can really keep track of who's engaged in mentoring, what they're working on, how well they're doing it, and so on and so on. Unless you have a web-based system, for example, at stage five, you will not have a mentoring culture where anybody at any time can get just-in-time mentoring. Just-in-time mentoring is only going to happen on a widespread basis if people can go into a database and find mentoring partners. It's not going to happen in the old paper-based ways where people are matched up using written applications and that sort of thing.
What is your concept of mentoring?
Well, my concept of mentoring actually started in 1978 when I was very naive, just getting into mentoring. I was a professor, so I did an ERIC search, the Educational Research Information Clearinghouse, to see what was the literature in the database, in the ERIC database, on mentoring. If you keyed in the keyword mentor, there was nothing. Absolutely nothing in 1978 in the database. So I did not know that that mentors or proteges needed any kind of training. I just simply matched them and wished them well. Because I was a professor and wanted to get research out of my time commitment in the field of mentoring, I followed these partners up as they were engaged in mentoring to find out what happened. And what I found is that when relationships were successful, the mentors equipped the protege with what the mentors know, which is the classical concept of mentoring, providing wise counsel, advice, guidance. So mentors equipped the protege with what the mentors know, and they also empowered the protégés. They empowered what the protégés wanted to do and become. And the reason I discovered that was important is because today's protégés are better educated, they are well-traveled, they've read. They bring a lot into the relationship that did not exist when the concept of mentoring originated many, many centuries ago. Back then, there were no books or formal schooling, and so in a way, the protege came into the relationship as an empty vessel into whom the mentor poured wisdom and knowledge and practical know-how and the tricks of the trade and so on to equip the protege, because there was no other way of doing it. already somewhat equipped, not totally, but somewhat, and they really need to be empowered, empowered to use their creativity, their unique assets as a human being, their diversity, empowered to fulfill their passions and goals and dreams of what they'd like to do and become. Because all of this on the empowering side ensures that organizations are not going to stagnate. If you think about it, if all mentors did was equip the protege, they would be turning out proteges who are alike. They'd all become the proverbial organization person. By empowering the protege, you're making sure that you acknowledge each individual's uniqueness as a protege, as a human being. And in turn, that unique person contributes that uniqueness to the organization so it does not stagnate. The equipping side gets the protege up to speed, helps the protege feel that I am part of the family, I know what to do, I know the unwritten rules, I've learned the ropes. The empowering side acknowledges their uniqueness as a human. Another concept of mentoring that I really like is being able to engage in mentoring anytime, anywhere, with anyone. And as I mentioned, for that to happen, you really need a web-based system so that you can go into this database system over the internet and find mentoring partners anytime, anywhere, for just-in-time mentoring.
Where do you see this evolving into the future?
Well, mentoring, since the late 1970s, has been growing quite rapidly. As I mentioned earlier, the biggest recipients of mentoring are young people. There's more mentoring for them than probably for everybody else combined, because we're so concerned about our young people and we want them to be successful, whether they're at risk of not finishing school or dropping out, or whether they're English second language and need to feel good about themselves as they're trying to navigate between a couple of different cultures, or whether they're talented and need enrichment to utilize their talents. But there's a lot of focus on mentoring young people. So, as I mentioned, the best companies to work for are the companies that provide mentoring of all kinds. And more companies want to be best companies, so they're going to be providing more mentoring. The research is consistently clear. If you provide regular mentoring, you reduce turnover more than enough to pay for the mentoring program. And everybody has turnover problems today. So I see more mentoring of more kinds happening. There's already e-mentoring where people are hooking up by sending emails and engaged in chat rooms over the internet. I expect more of that. I was on the phone just yesterday with Cisco Systems. They're coming out with a state-of-the-art video conferencing capability, and I'm hoping that I can convince them to utilize our web-based mentoring management system in conjunction with their video conferencing. So no matter where the partners are, they can see each other through the video conferencing. They can get matched up using our system, so best fit partners are matched, and then they create an online mentoring action plan using our system so that they know what they're going to do, they're prepared when they meet, and they don't get dissatisfied simply because they're not in the same place, you know. So I just see mentoring expanding in all kinds of ways. I also think we're going to begin realizing that traditional classroom training and learning cannot really teach people wisdom and practical know-how. In a way, the white-collar professions need to learn from the trades. In the trades, you get into an apprenticeship program. You work alongside somebody who knows how to do what you want to learn to do. They make sure you learn how to do it as well, so that when you finish your apprenticeship, you hit the ground running. You're competent. You're able to work in your field and do a good job and perform well. In the white-collar professions, you can get a bachelor's degree, a master's degree, a doctorate, and you can come out of those degrees still not hitting the ground running, not knowing what to do at a practical level, because so much of classroom training and learning is head knowledge, where you really haven't had an opportunity to apply and practice what you've been learning. And I think mentoring is going to step into that breach and overcome the transfer of training problem. And why do I see mentoring evolving in all these ways? There are only really two ways to get wisdom. One is to discover wisdom yourself through repeated trial and error learning over time. Or a mentor can share hard lessons learned and really help you gain wisdom more quickly. And today we are overloaded with information. Information is not wisdom. We're overloaded in the classroom, on the internet, in our books, in our libraries. There's information everywhere. And what everybody needs is the wisdom to know what to do with the information. They also need the practical know-how to translate what they know into usable knowledge. And mentors are able to do that. They've always done it, and I think they're going to do it more and more in the future, whether it's side by side or whether it's long distance using video conferencing or other capability.
You know, it's interesting, Bill. Some of the things you talk about sort of ties into Bloom's taxonomy of learning.
Yes.
And it seems like, which is, you know, knowledge comprehension, application, analysis, synthesis, and evaluation.
Yes.
And it looks like mentoring really ties into that, sort of the upper end, right? The application, analysis, synthesis, and evaluation portions, and enables that, which is what educators have been looking for a long time. So they tend to find that that's the difficult part, and the easy part is the knowledge comprehension portion. So it looks like your ideas and what you're trying to do is enabling all of what educators have been looking for centuries.
Well, in fact, Stephen, I didn't mention this in any detail, but the way I got into mentoring was because of Bloom's taxonomy. I was sitting beside a teacher in the Vancouver school system. Her name is Sheila Herman, and she had started an enrichment program for the students in her school in grades 5, 6, and 7. It was a pull-out program. They were pulled out of their regular classrooms, came into her enrichment center a couple of times a week. And what they focused on there was Bloom's taxonomy. And she found that when they started doing projects that involved using the higher levels of the taxonomy, the synthesis and evaluation levels, that she could not stay on top of all of these projects that all of these different students were doing. And so she asked me what I would suggest. And without batting an eye, I said, how about if my students start working with your students? Because I was teaching my students Bloom's taxonomy, because they were future teachers. And I wanted them to learn to teach at levels higher than just the informational level, you know, who, what, when, where, and get into the comprehension and analysis and so on levels. So we began to set up the mentoring for the students in her classroom, and one of the requirements of my students was that they had to implement Bloom's taxonomy as they worked with the kids. They had to make sure the kids did activities at each of the levels in Bloom's taxonomy, except the lowest informational level, of course. And that's how I got into mentoring.
Well, Bill, I mean, this has been a real pleasure talking with you, and thank you for coming in to do this interview and really sharing your valued experiences, wisdom, and deep insights with the audience.
Well, I appreciate it, Stephen. Anytime I can be of assistance, I'm more than happy.